More variety.
You're listening to Para X.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and tonight's guest are not necessarily those of this radio network, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Listener discretion is advised. Now lock your doors, open your minds, and prepare yourself to go
beyond the edge.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have ignition.
Sit down, strap in, and hold on tight. You're about to be taken beyond the edge.
Just when you thought it was safe. Beyond the Edge Radio is back.
Lock your doors.
Open your minds. Beyond the Edge Radio is back.
Better than electroshock therapy.
Beyond the Edge Radio is back.
And your granddaddy's talk radio show. This is Beyond the Edge Radio.
Beyond the Edge Radio.
Promise me.
Looking home for the best in alternative talk radio.
New guests, new topics,
and a new sound.
All new BTE Radio.
Beyond the Edge Radio, your source for the best alternative talk radio with an attitude.
Where else would you spend your Sunday nights?
Beyond the Edge Radio.
If you're not listening, you're just stupid.
And good evening and welcome to another edition of Beyond the Edge Radio. It's Sunday night. It is September the 14th, I believe. And
15th.
Wow.
15th.
Where the heck is the time going, man? I'm stuck in yesterday, man. I'm so busy. But welcome to the show, everybody. My name is Eric Altman, your host and producer of tonight's program. We want to welcome you to BTE Radio. With me, as always, your co-host from Phantoms and Monsters and Astral Perceptions, the one and only Lon Strickler. Good evening, Lon. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
Been
glad
a busy
to hear.
Week.
It's
busy week for me. Busy week for you.
When aren't they?
Yeah, well.
When aren't they? That's why I'm so messed up on the times.
Yeah.
And joining us.
I can understand that.
Yeah. What are you going to do? Joining us also from up north in northeastern Pennsylvania, the color commentator of tonight's program, the one and only Fork Chop, Sean Forker. Hello, Sean. How are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm great. Eric Lon, always good to be back here Sunday night, Beyond the Edge Radio.
It is a great night indeed here at BTE Radio because we have a fantastic guest joining us on the program. He's an author, a cryptozoologist, and field researcher for the Center for Fatian Zoology and the Gulf Coast Bigfoot Research Organization, as well as the Pangea Institute. He's a consultant for various paranormal groups. He's investigated reports of cryptids and mysterious animals around the world, including Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster, Chupacabras, Mothman, Thunderbirds, and werewolves. In addition to appearing in three episodes of television series Monster Quest on the History Channel, our guest tonight has been featured on the History Channel special The Real Wolfmen, as well as Legend Hunters, a show on the Travel Channel and A&E, Paranatural on the National Geographic Channel, Ultimate Encounters on True TV, and the latest, William Shatner's Weird or What. He has written multiple books, and he recently appeared on the Coast to Coast AM program with George Norrie. The books he's written include Big Bird, Modern Sightings of Flying Monsters, as well as he co-authored the book Monsters of Texas with Nick Redfern, our good friend. And he's contributed to trade publications including Fate Magazine, Animals and Men, the Journal of British Columbia Scientific Cryptozoology Club, and the Bigfoot Times. He hails from the Houston, Texas area. I believe, or San Antonio, Texas, excuse me. He's from San Antonio, Texas, and he's a good friend of the program. And we welcome back tonight Ken Gerhard.
Always good.
Yeah, looking
Ken
forward
here.
To talking to Ken. I always like talking to Ken.
Yeah, me
Lots
too.
Of good stuff. Book's really good too.
Yeah, his latest book we're going to be talking about tonight was just released last week. It's called Encounters with Flying Humanoids. Humanoids.
Did you eat marbles today?
my LSD is wearing off. Encounters with Chairman. Flying Humanoids, Mothman, Man-Birds, Gargoyles, and Other Winged Beasts. And it's forwarded by Dr. Carl P.N. Schuker. And Ken was kind enough to give me a copy of the book when we were together last weekend at ParaFest. We had tables side by side, and we spent the event just chatting and hanging out and having a great time at ParaFest. We'll probably talk about that, as well as his investigations and his look into flying humanoids. Should be a great show tonight, guys.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it, definitely.
I am as well. Included in that book, as I mentioned, the Mothman. I'll be heading to the Mothman Festival this coming weekend, which is Saturday, September 22nd, I believe? 22nd or 23rd?
Right.
Something like that. And it's taking place in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. See, I'm horrible with days. I forget my birthday if I wasn't reminded. But it's coming this weekend to Point Pleasant, West Virginia. I'll be heading down that Saturday to hang out with some good friends of mine, saying hello to people that we've had on the show, such as Rosemary Ellen Guiley, Lyle Blackburn will be there, Stan Gordon. We've got a lot of people that are going to be there that have been on the program, so I'm going to make sure we schmooze and suck up to them so we can get them to come back on the show again. It's going to be a good time
great.
For everybody.
That's why we send you there, Eric. And don't forget your box of chapstick.
I will. I'll take it with me.
There you go. Pecker up, sweetheart.
God knows my lips get chapped quite easy. Anywho, it's as Lon mentioned at the beginning of the program, it has been a very long week for all of us. My weekend concluded arriving home about 3 hours ago as I walked in the door from a Bigfoot investigation that took place this past weekend. And as promised on Facebook, we're going to discuss that case and what all took place this weekend. I don't want to give away the exact location because we are still working with the eyewitness. His name is Rob, and we don't want to give away the exact location or his full name, you know, and where he's from. But I will say that it took place in southwestern Pennsylvania, and it is an area that has had historically Bigfoot sighting reports before. And it's not far from the area where Stan Gordon received that flying humanoid report in 2011, where the creature walked across the road in front of the guy driving, you know, down the road at night. We remember that one. The gargoyle-looking creature.
Mm. Yeah, that's right.
So
interesting story there.
So it's not far from there. Okay, I got an understanding where it's at now.
It's about 10 miles. 10 okay. miles as a crow flies, so... But we did receive a report from him, and it was really not a report, but it was an email. And it was basically a shout-out for help. And I'm going to read you what he sent to me. This was sent to me on September the 12th. He said, "My name is Robert, and I was coyote hunting at 12:20 a.m. on September 12th of 2013. I heard a horrifying scream, and a giant gorilla creature charged me from the bushes. I discharged 3 12-gauge slugs at it and hit it once. I followed a blood trail and got charged at again in the woods. Please contact me," and he gave me his phone number. So I sent him an email back and said someone from the group will contact you. Now, we've heard these stories before, people saying they shot at a Bigfoot and hit it and nothing ever comes of it.
Mm-hmm.
So at first I was a little kind of suspicious, I guess, or kind of hesitant, you know, to put any stock into this report. But I did pass this off to our members and Tom Ference, Rob Myers, George and Becky Stevens, all went up to see him on Saturday. And met with this eyewitness and found him to be quite believable. He's a young man in his early 20s. He is an Army veteran and served some time over in Iraq, so we want to say thank you to Rob for that. He apparently, as he says in his email to me, spends a lot of time out there coyote hunting. He's collected over 26 coyote. And that particular evening, he was out there coyote hunting by himself. And... he got this strange feeling overcome. It's just like something was watching him. And at that point, he decided to walk back to his car, which wasn't too far away. So he started hiking down a trail. And he got as he's walking along this trail, I should say, he begins to hear something behind him to his left following him through the woods. He could hear the branches breaking and the brush cracking and Something was walking, but he didn't pay much attention to it. He just continued to walk, and his thing continued to follow him. Well, he reaches the parking lot of this very forested, wooded area and arrives at his car, and that's when, according to this gentleman, this thing, this giant thing, came to the edge of the tree line, and he could see this shadowy figure standing at the tree line, and it screamed at him. And he's described the scream as a high-pitched woman-like scream, and it really unnerved him. So having his shotgun at his side, he unloaded three shots into this figure. And he claims that on the third shot that he believes he hit it because it let out this really strange cry and took off running into the woods. He chases after it. He gets so far into the woods, into a swampy marsh area where the creature apparently ran into, and it began to growl at him. He fired two more shots just blindly into the marshy area and became freaked out, turned and ran back to his car and left the area. That's his claim. Well, Saturday, Tom and Rob, and or I should say Bob Myers, and the Stevens went out there, and they met with this gentleman. They interviewed him. He walked through a recreation of what happened out there. And they found his story to be pretty credible. They found him to be pretty credible. He was still pretty shaken up by what he experienced. A search was done of the immediate area where he claims this creature was standing. And they found two large impressions measuring, I believe, about 13 inches in length, with a 53-inch stride between the two tracks, the two impressions. And that was about it. There was no blood found. Of course, it had rained Saturday morning, or Friday night, Saturday morning. So there was really nothing going to be there. It was pretty much washed away. And they looked around the area. They found no other signs of anything large being in the area other than a couple worn game trails. They did find it very believable. And they told him they'd return, you know, again to check out the area and keep in touch with him. I received an email last night from him in Facebook stating that there was another possible sighting that took place in that area, and this is what he wrote to me, and I'll just read it to you really quick. If I can find it here. Oh, I don't have it. I apologize. I thought I had it, but I must have deleted it. But long and short of it was that I believe his girlfriend's friend, or a friend of his girlfriend, or his wife's girlfriend, I should say, had
sisters, nephews, daughters,
yes,
cousins, former roommate,
an acquaintance that he knows, had a sighting 1 a.m. last morning, or this morning, of a creature running across the road in front of a car in that same exact area. Now, we have no way to confirm this because, obviously, we don't have details of who this person was, and we weren't given much information about it when we talked to him today. But today, Brian Seach, Tom Long, Tom Ferentz, and myself all traveled up to this area. We met with this gentleman, and he took us to the sighting location, showed us, recounted exactly what happened again, and showed us the area. The two Toms and I and Brian, we searched the area again for prints in the ground. We found the possible imprints in the ground, but unfortunately, they're pretty much washed out. They really weren't showing us much of anything. We looked for branches broken up pretty high. We're not able to locate anything, and no sign of anything large being in that brush area. We searched around the area. We found no other tracks, no other trails, nothing really to indicate a large creature was there. Tom then took me to an area about a mile and a half from the sighting location down the trail into this huge open area past several ponds, sat past a swamp, and up to this runoff area where apparently there's some orange sulfurish runoff water from the abandoned coal mines up on the mountain, up on the hill. And some kind of animal apparently was rolling around in this orange mud, this water, because just inside the tree line there were rubs on the trees, like something had either was covered with this mud or this orange water and rubbed itself against the trees. Now, Bob claims that he collected hair off of one of the trees, and he's going to have it checked, which is great. I looked at the other tree, which was very smooth. Now, I did measure the orange rub marks on the trees, and they measured about 4'6" on the one tree, and the branch above it that was broken was about 5'4". So I can't rule out the possibility of a black bear.
I wasn't there, so you could rule me out.
It wasn't you, yeah. You're a little shorter than that. But but
I'll get you, Eric.
Excuse me. what I did find on the tree, along with the orange caked on mud, were several strands of short, coarse black hair that was still on the tree. Now, looking at this black hair, my first impression, I did not collect it, because to me, it looked like black bear. I've seen black bear hair, that's what it looked like to me. So I did not collect it, and the witness unfortunately reached out with his fingers to pull it off the tree and already contaminated it, so I didn't want to try to collect it, and it had been a waste of time. So we left that there. We then hiked back out to the cars. We saw no other evidence or no other proof of anything going on in the area. But I've got to say, for this this gentleman to come forward and report this to us, that I found him pretty believable. I believe that he truly experienced what he claims he experienced. Now, I wasn't there. As I told him, I didn't see what he saw. I didn't hear what he heard. So I can't say that this was a Bigfoot. But he was truly shaken up by this, and he just wanted some confirmation and some validation as to what he experienced.
Well, it takes a lot of courage to come out and, you know, not just report that, but also be with you guys and be out there and, you know, being at the ready to assist you guys in the actual investigation. And Tom did a phenomenal job with that write-up, so give some kudos to him that he posted out to the group yesterday. And just a good job getting out there so fast and working with everybody today.
Yeah, I've got to give kudos to, as I said, George and Becky, Tom Ferentz, Bob Myers, that crew that went out there Saturday and did the first initial follow-up with the witness. They did a great job. They did a great job writing up the report for our members. And once we conclude this case, and this is still ongoing because we're going to be following up with the witness, but once they we conclude the case, we'll release the report publicly, of course, minus the eyewitness name and the exact location. But I was out there today. I took a lot of photographs of the area, of the sighting location, and we're going to be doing a nighttime observation out there in the next week or so. We're planning that right now, and we're going to keep in touch with the witness, and he's going to continue to work with us and keep us informed if anything new or exciting comes out of that that area.
Another good thing is, too, he called the sheriff and had the sheriff come out there, which was good because, you know, he thought he shot something.
Mm-hmm.
So just in case it wasn't a hairy hominid, you know, they did find something.
Yeah.
Then they knew about it. So, yeah, I got to give him credit for that as well.
Right.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, a very knowledgeable young man. I was impressed with what he described, and everything that he described fits into the typical things that we've heard of when encountering Bigfoot. The forest going quiet and void of any animal or insect sounds. The animal that paralleled him through the woods, walking as he walked and stopping as he stopped. The high-pitched, shrill scream that he heard, and the unfortunately not seeing an exact creature, getting a very good look at it, the ominous form that stood in the brush that he shot at. And, to me, that's pretty vindictive, indicative, I should say, and indicative of him having a Squatch encounter. Now, again, I wasn't there to confirm this. You know, I didn't see what he saw or heard what he heard, but it's pretty interesting, and I find him pretty credible, and I think he's telling the truth.
Well, you know, and the way you described the place in your report, I mean, it looks like another good study area as well.
Oh, it's huge. I was very, very taken aback by this area, especially where it's located at, because I really never realized there was that much wilderness in that particular area. It's just miles of forests, swamps, bogs, marshes, multiple ponds, creeks, an abundance of berries and foliage, and wildlife galore, from coyote to black bear to deer to small game, like squirrel. We saw a ton of squirrels. So there's plenty of food, plenty of water, and there's those old coal mines that sit up on the mountain to the left of the property. So it's public property. You can go out there and hike around the area. So we're going to go out and check it out. So pretty excited about that.
Sounds promising.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was my weekend in a nutshell. And exactly what happened today with our investigation and the sighting report that we had. So unfortunately, we can't say it was a Bigfoot for sure. We don't have any evidence to back that up. All we have is the eyewitness testimony, but the eyewitness seems pretty credible and pretty believable. So, it's pretty interesting.
Well, the sightings in Pennsylvania have been pretty good this year. I mean, there have been a lot of sightings, and I have been impressed so far from what I've been. Well, of course, this is the first year I'm getting reports from you guys too, because I just joined PBS this year. But yeah, I'm impressed with what some of the sightings that are coming out of the state. So
now we haven't had an abundance of sightings like we've had in the past couple of years. 2009, 2010, we're quite busy in Fayette County, and we still get reports out of there from time to time, but nothing like we've gotten. This year has been nothing at all like we've gotten in the past. It's
oh, okay.
Yeah, we've had a handful of reports. Sean, would you say maybe 15?
Yeah, I mean, when you compare that to the last couple of years, I guess I see Lon's point in saying that it's been active, but it's not been like 2009, 2010, where you couldn't go a weekend without investigating a different sighting report.
Right.
But they're coming back, and a lot of that, I think, is people now. I really think that this Bigfoot thing's starting to die down a little bit.
I hope.
And I think we're starting to get a lot more actual legitimate cases coming in now.
Well, I hope that's the case.
You know, there are a lot of areas, too. I mean, statewide you're getting reports. And
oh, yeah, from areas we weren't getting them in the past, too.
Yeah.
Well, I have to rule out a majority of these reports as either misidentifications or fabrications or just outright, hoaxes because of the popularity of the TV shows. There are not that many Bigfoot in Pennsylvania.
Well, that we know of. I mean, it's hard to say. You know, I'm with you, though. I think what a lot of people are seeing are definitely misidentifications, especially in the areas of Pennsylvania that aren't well known for that type of activity.
Right.
Would you not agree? I mean, places that we've not gotten reports before. And let's face it, Pennsylvania is filled up with like 95 different Bigfoot groups now. And
there
are a lot of them.
You just don't know what's going on. But and when you have that many people out there, you don't know who's out there in the same track of woods you are. There's not that many coincidences. You know, I think you're getting a lot of researchers inadvertently interacting with each other quite a bit.
Well, there's a reason why we won't release the area where this sighting took place, and it was because it was another researcher who's not very well respected in the field was contacted, and the last thing we want is this researcher to come into this area, because as soon as he does, it'll be all over the news.
And we don't want that crap.
Yeah, he likes to make a public spectacle of every research case that he goes out on, because he's the Bigfoot hunter. And he's got to be on TV. So we're keeping things quiet, not to not share with fellow researchers, but there's one in particular that we don't want to give this location away to, because the witness doesn't want this gentleman coming out to this location. So that's why we won't release it.
Let's be honest, you're sharing the information, you're just keeping the exact location under wraps, and that's really out of the privacy of the witness, and it's just not something that needs to be shared.
Right, right. But that was the case that we investigated, and once we get things wrapped up, I'll probably give a little more information away as to what county it was in. I think we can do that safely, but the exact location I'm not going to give away until the case is wrapped up, especially if we're going to have crews out there researching and spending time in the woods night hopping, because we don't want hoaxers out there, you know, making a lot of noise and giving out false calls and wood knocks and stuff like that, so... So that's the reason for it. It's not because we're greedy, not because we don't want to share. We'd like to share, but unfortunately we run that risk of people running out there and hoaxing us, especially this guy, and we don't want that.
Mm-hmm. No, we don't.
Nope. But that was my week, and again, it's up in the air as to what it is. So Moving on to another subject, let's talk a little bit about the Mothman Festival that's coming up next weekend, since we have about 5 minutes before we go to break.
Yeah, I was looking forward to going to that, but professional commitments are keeping me at bay this weekend, so unfortunately I won't be able to attend with everyone.
Yeah, I'm going to go down Saturday, and I'm not attending as a speaker. I'm not attending as having a vendor table. I'm just showing up.
And I'm as yourself.
As myself, yes. I've never been to an event before. I've never been to the Mothman Festival. I was invited to speak several years ago, but I couldn't make it due to other commitments. So I'm looking forward to going down there and meeting Jeff Walmsley. And I've been to Point Pleasant once before. It is a very, very small town. I was very surprised at how small it is. And I was actually more surprised that when I went into the Mothman Museum and did my little tour. They've got a lot of artifacts, a lot of historical newspaper articles, a lot of photos, costumes from the movie, props from the movie, The Mothman Prophecies, even the suit that John Keel wore. they've got a lot of really cool stuff, but I was impressed with the museum. I got to admit, honestly, I was not very impressed with the size of the town. I thought the town was going to be much bigger than it was, but a few blocks and you're out of town. So I don't know where they're going to put 50,000 people at.
Well, we're going to be sleeping on the streets, in the alleys, and on the rooftops.
I guess so.
I think most of the time, I think most of the people usually stay across the river or one of the hotels south of there.
In Gallipolis.
Yeah, and yeah. There's another area down there, too. They've got a lot of hotels up and down that stretch.
Yeah, there's some hotels across the river in Ohio and a few down further south in West Virginia. But it's going to be interesting because there is no parking in Point Pleasant. So I have no idea where these people are going to park. I really, really don't.
Wow.
It'll be interesting. But I'm like I said, I'm looking forward to seeing people that I haven't seen for a while and seeing fellow researchers and friends like Fred Saluga, Brian Seach are going to be there, Stan Gordon, Rosemary Ellen Guiley. I'm trying to think who else is going to be there. There's going to be a whole bunch of other people that are going
to
be there.
I think you and Stan just go to these events so you can rack up the frequent flyer miles.
I wish. No. Stan's actually going down Friday with his wife, and he'll be there the whole weekend. I'm just going down Saturday coming back.
What a lovely lady, his wife. She's a great lady.
Yes, she definitely is. But it should be a fun event. I don't know how long I'll stay because I'm not a big crowd person. 50,000 people will get on my nerves real quick, and I'll want to go out in the woods somewhere and just disappear. So maybe I'll go to the TNT area.
Dun, 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 dun. I was trying to come up with a joke, and all I could think of
was just a little musical interlude.
I can hear the gears rolling.
Oh, I'm slow tonight. I've been up since 1:30 this morning. Give me a break. I'm sorry.
Well, let's get on to tonight's guest. He is standing by in the wings. His name is Ken Gerhard. He is a cryptozoologist, an author, a field investigator. He's appeared on multiple television programs. He lectures at multiple different functions, events, conferences across the country. Last week he was with me in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania for ParaFest 2013. We're going to be talking about his brand new book that was just released called Encounters with Flying Humanoids, a look at Mothman, Man-Birds, Gargoyles, and Other Winged Beasts. Ken Gerhard is going to be joining us in just about 30 seconds from now. So, guys, what do you say we head to break? We take care of what we need to do here, and we come back with Ken Gerhard.
Sounds good.
Let's go.
All right, folks, this is BTE Radio. That stands for Beyond the Edge Radio, live here on the ParaX Radio Network. We'll be back after this with Ken Gerhard.
Mama warned you there'd be shows like this. Beyond the Edge Radio. Beyond the Edge Radio. We'll be right back.
positively.
Best alternative talk radio on the planet. Would we lie?
And welcome back to tonight's program. This is BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio, live here on the Para-X Radio Network, 835 here on the East Coast. And a great guest is joining us on the program tonight. We're going to be talking about flying humanoids and other strange and mysterious cryptids. He's an author, a field investigator, a cryptozoologist, a television star. He's appeared on many, many television programs, and most recently, Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. Good friend of mine. I got the chance to hang out with him last week at ParaFest and a few weeks earlier down at Mid-South. And we are both into the Bigfoot phenomenon and other cryptids, and it's a real pleasure to call this gentleman my friend. Welcoming back to BTE Radio, please give a round of applause for Ken Gerhard. Good evening, Ken. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing wonderful, Eric. And yes, it has been ages since we last spoke, hasn't it?
It has. I was saying, what, six days?
We spent about three straight days sitting next to each other, and I guess we shot the breeze quite a bit. It was awesome.
Yeah, and we got to watch the alligator pee on the floor, which was the highlight.
Yeah, I missed that, but
well, that inside joke, in case anybody doesn't know, across from Ken and I, there was a gentleman, and I can't recall the name of his organization or group, but he had two alligators. One, I believe, was about 3 foot, and one was maybe about 4 or 5 foot. And, of course, he had their mouths taped up with black electrical tape. And he had them on display. He had a couple boa constrictors and a couple tarantulas. And, Ken, you were lucky enough to play with one of those tarantulas.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not touching that one. no thanks. but during the show, he had one of the gators out on the floor on display, and it was walking around and stuff. And somebody said, hey, man, that gator just peed all over the floor. And sure enough, there's gator pee everywhere. So a highlight of the event last weekend for sure.
Well, you think about it. I mean, the gator's got to go. He's sitting there for hours on end, you know. It's not like they're giving him any bathroom breaks or anything. So
it was entertaining, to say the least. But it was a very cool event, and it was my pleasure to hang out, you know, next to you during the event. And we had a good time.
Yeah, always. Always have a good time hanging with you. And it was a real honor meeting Stan Gordon for the first time. Of course, you know, I've been hearing the name and reading his reports for years and years and years, and just never had the opportunity. So to finally spend some time with him and to participate in a cryptozoology / UFO panel with you and he, that was quite an honor.
That was a lot of fun, actually. And we did that on, I believe it was Friday night around 6 p.m., and we got some curveballs thrown at us on the panel, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Dave Schrader was moderating, and he always does a good job. He definitely threw some curveballs at us.
He kept us on our toes, but it was a fun event. It was great seeing you, as always. And as I said, we hung out at Mid-South together about a month prior. That was a fun event as well. And as we were talking, you're still scheduled to appear at multiple events throughout the rest of the year.
Well, I've got a few. I believe that they're mostly here in Texas. I'm doing. We've got an event called Phantom Fest the first weekend in October here in San Antonio at the famous Haunted Menger Hotel, and you know, a lot of paranormal and also the, you know, the horror sci-fi contingent will be there as well. And then we're doing another one in San Antonio first week in November called Los Dios de Muerte, the Day of the Dead, and that's going to be at the Haunted Black Swan Inn. And then I'm real excited about this, guys. I just got asked to speak at a Harry Potter convention in November up in Oklahoma. So I'm going to have to brush up on my Harry Potter a little bit, but that should be fun.
That sounds cool, man. That sounds like a great time and a great lineup for the fall for you. And all in time to help promote your new book, Encounters with Flying Humanoids.
Oh, well, thanks for mentioning it. Yes, I do have a new book out. It was just released maybe a couple of weeks ago, towards the beginning of September. And so far, I've been very pleased, been getting some good feedback on it. And, I'm real excited. It was basically the culmination of 4 years of pretty consistent research on that one subject. And as you guys well know, it is probably one of the stranger subjects kind of floating around out there in 40 in circles.
Yeah, there's a lot of the flying humanoids in your book that you talk about that I wouldn't even call cryptids. I would call them more of a fringe type of creature because they just don't seem to fit in with your normal animal.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And, you know, I definitely was outside of my comfort zone with this subject matter, of course. You know, I've always been into the very traditional cryptozoology in terms of Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti, Loch Ness Monster, Thunderbirds, that, you know, that type of thing. But Llewellyn, my publisher, asked me to write a book about flying humanoids, and I did have an opportunity to do some television shows, a Monster Quest episode, and a show for Sci-Fi about the Mothman, so that kind of piqued my interest. And I guess this is something we can definitely talk about because it kind of, you know, these are the types of subjects that sort of blur the lines of cryptozoology, don't they? Because they involve, in many cases, creatures that seem to be flesh and blood, but of course they go against everything that we know about in terms of the fossil history and zoology. I mean, these are completely unnatural or seemingly unnatural types of beings. Now, the word or the phrase zooform phenomenon, of course, coined by some of my colleagues at the Center for Freudian Zoology, meant to describe, I guess, some of the weirder fringe creatures that we sometimes investigate as cryptozoologists, like flying humanoids, lizard men, werewolves, and things of that ilk.
Well, let me ask your opinion straight out, and this is going to be a really probably a difficult question to ask you here, and I'm really curious to hear your answer. What are your thoughts on these flying humanoids? Do you think they possibly could exist?
Well, I mean, I believe there really is a valid phenomenon going on here. I mean, I've interviewed many eyewitnesses who have had encounters with these beings or apparitions, whatever they are, and you know, the emotional impact and the trauma that the eyewitnesses experience really bring it home in terms of, you know, these are real experiences. On the other hand, if you look at the eyewitness descriptions, you have a vast variations of physical descriptions from creature to creature and place to place. So there's really no consistency there. And in addition, you have behavior patterns that don't really seem to match with anything that we know of in the natural world. For example, the Mothman was reputed to chase people's cars at speeds approaching 100 miles an hour without flapping its wings, to take off straight up in the air like a helicopter. There are, of course, whispers about UFOs and men in black and psychic phenomenon and all these things that are kind of linked or connected to the flying humanoid. So in that respect, I think it's fairly obvious that we're not dealing with flesh and blood creatures, nothing that was born or evolved on this planet.
When did we start hearing reports and sightings of these flying humanoid type creatures, Ken?
Well, I mean, if you go back in different antiquity in mythologies and so forth, in my book I have an appendix where I talk about some of the global and cultural mythologies about these beings. Dating back about 17,000 years ago, there's a cave painting in Lascaux, France, known as the Birdman of Lascaux, and though it doesn't possess wings, it does seem to show a humanoid form with a bird-like head. So at least that illustrates that, you know, 17,000 years ago, that humans were beginning to synthesize human characteristics with those of birds and other animals. And then if you go to, you jump back about 900 BC, you have the ancient Sumerians have these bas reliefs where they depict beings known as the Apkallu or Abgal, which were typically shown as man-like forms with long beards and wings attached, and I guess they were viewed as sort of demigods, sages, priests and protectors and so forth. And then you have other mythologies from the Middle East. You have the Pazuzu, the wind demon from Assyrian mythology. You have the Greek harpies. There are references in the Bible to winged beings known as the Chaot or Chaot. The Egyptian Sphinx sometimes bore human-like characteristics, and it's a global phenomenon. As I mentioned, you have Garuda from India and Asia, the Tengu of Japan, Kamazots in the Americas, the Orang Bati. So there's many, many examples of these winged humanoid creatures. Now, sometimes they're anthropomorphic in terms of sharing characteristics of humans and avians, birds, and in other cases, they are described as literally bat men or man bats, you know, man-like characteristics but leathery bat-like wings. So as I mentioned, there are many diverse forms, but seems to be a recurring theme in many cultures.
Most definitely, and that was my next question for you. With so many of these different types of descriptions, you know, I guess how do you even begin to start trying to put this all together?
Well, that was definitely a challenge that I faced trying to lay out the book. Now, Mothman, of course, there's so much material there that Mothman was deserved of its own chapter in my book, one chapter dedicated solely to Mothman. And then I kind of split it up. I had a chapter about Birdmen, and, you know, that was kind of a phrase that was coined by John Keel. He often called them man-birds or Birdmen in his books. And so I had a chapter about those. And then I did a chapter about gargoyles. You know, even though they're not technically humanoid in nature, when you talk about things like the Jersey Devil and the Briggs Road man bats and the bat squatch, beings like that that seem to have some humanoid characteristics or at least mammalian characteristics with wings. And then I did a chapter on the UFO connection, because there seemed to be a lot of those, just kind of weird humanoids floating around. And also did a chapter on the Mexican cases from the past decade, where you've had these apparently wingless humanoid figures known as UFHs, or unidentified flying humanoids, that are sort of just floating around in the stratosphere, and many people have apparently captured these beings on videotape. So a lot of different delineations there, and it was very hard to kind of piece that all together.
You know, Ken, when I was going through your book, you had mentioned a story I never heard about that actually happened right down the road from me. And it was supposedly happening in the 80s in what that was, well, it's Fincksburg, Maryland. Mm-hmm. And where this whatever it was, the woman thought it kind of looked like a humanoid, but then something like a pterodactyl. But I know the area real well because, in fact, where she saw it at off of Route 91 is actually a shopping center now. And there's,
wow,
there's a Jewish cemetery right behind it. So that's the area where she saw it. But I you know, it brought something back to me that area is not really far from the Patapsco River Liberty Reservoir area and watershed. And back in the 80s, around the same time, there were a lot of sightings of flying creatures, large flying creatures. And I had not even thought about that. And I went back and looked at my notes, and there were two instances I had recorded. So that's something I'm going to have to look back into. But the instance that you had recorded, I never even heard of before.
Yeah, and that's an interesting case. I think I got that out of a Strange magazine, maybe.
Right.
Mark Stravinsky article. Yeah. That particular woman, you mentioned that eyewitness, did sound like what she was describing was kind of like a pterodactyl in nature, but she also said it had a human-like face that was stretched down in the shape of a beak. And what's interesting about that particular case is that particular description matches exactly a flying humanoid encounter that I document here in Texas. And there's a gentleman named Frank Ramirez who I've gotten to know quite well. And back in the 1998, when he was a young man, he claimed that he encountered this flying humanoid type being that was perched on the roof of his mother's house. And when from what he could see of its face, it actually, he described that exact same thing, that it had a human-like face that was kind of stretched down so that its chin was very pointy and long, almost like a bird's beak, which is, you know, pretty bizarre. And when I showed him that particular report from Maryland, You know, I could see that he got a little bit of a reaction from that because he had never, I guess he had never heard anybody that had encountered or seen something similar to what he had encountered.
Well, yeah, because I know one of the reports that I had, you know, I had taken, and this was, I think, back in like 83 or 84, that this one being was flying underneath the Nicodemus Bridge, which is actually about maybe 5 miles away from Finksburg. And the witness had seen it fly underneath and in and out of the bridge 3 or 4 times. And that's the way they described it. They described it as like a pterodactyl-looking creature with like a 20 to 25-foot wingspan on it. So that I hadn't even thought about that. That is that's really wild.
That is cool, Lon. You know, an interesting kind of point that comes up here as we talk about this, you know, pterodactyls are obviously, you know, if they exist still, are, you know, would be very distinctive in appearance, we think.
Sure.
They would have the very reptilian appearance. Of course, like bats, their wings basically consist of their hands, a thin membrane that's stretched out from their, you know, small finger or pinky finger across. But they do have some fingers kind of sticking up, and perhaps they do have a bat-like appearance. Some of them did. We don't know for sure exactly what they look like. But, you know, I wonder if some of the cases in my book seem to blur those lines because people describe them as looking somewhat like pterodactyls. But then they'll throw in something like, well, it had very sturdy man-like legs.
Uh-huh.
Well, we know that pterosaurs did not have sturdy legs. They
right.
They were not really adept at moving around on the ground. They may have moved around on all fours. But that brings an interesting point. You know, could we be dealing with, in some of these cases, misidentifications of, you know, equally weird creatures?
Uh-huh.
But, you know, we can only imagine that when people see these things, they're getting fleeting glimpses of them, and their adrenaline is really pumping, and it's at night, and you know, so, and you know, the memory, the recall is not always as good as they would want it to be. So perhaps they are in some cases filling in the blanks, so to speak, you know, in terms of trying to relay what they've seen or what they think they've seen.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I had just got a report last week of a. It was funny. The report just sounded like that. It was a humanoid, but then they mentioned something about a long beak, and it's like, well, what are they talking? I mean, I couldn't really understand what she really meant by it. You know, it was bigger than any bird I knew of, but this thing had human features. But then she mentioned the beak, so I don't know, and I don't know what she saw, and that's about all I got out of her.
That is interesting, though.
Yeah.
I appreciate you sharing that little nugget with me.
We got a couple questions from the chat room for you, Ken.
Okay.
If you don't mind answering, Sharon Lee would like to know, have you ever seen a flying humanoid or cryptid?
No, absolutely not. I've never seen any cryptid. Of course, people always ask me that. That might be the first thing they ever asked me. I never have seen. I guess the closest I would say that I've been to, if I was going to, no type of flying cryptid whatsoever. I've of course examined the remains of about a half dozen of these weird blue dog creatures, which I don't really consider to be cryptids at all. They're just really weird looking dog-like animals. But of course, you know, some people might characterize them as being strange enough to be considered a cryptid.
It looks like Skype has struck again.
I saw
Skype demons.
I'm almost positive I saw a red wolf, Canis rufus, down near El Campo, Texas, years ago, and it was you know, it was much larger than a coyote, and it seemed to look like a wolf. And technically, red wolves are extinct in Texas, so I guess that would be the closest I've got to actually seeing something that I think might be considered a valid cryptid, but I've never seen anything else, no flying cryptids, and certainly never had a sighting of a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch or a lake monster or anything else like that.
All right, the other question comes from Ceiling Cat. She wants to know if you're aware of anyone having done a thermal scan of the Jersey Pine Barrens. Has anybody gone out there looking for the New Jersey Devil and tried that maybe in a plane or helicopter doing a thermal skim from the air?
No, I'm not aware of anyone really doing anything like that. That's an interesting idea, interesting proposition. But, you know, as you guys know, I mean, when we start talking about these research endeavors, you know, we're basically all self-funded researchers that don't have a lot of money or fancy equipment a lot of times. So, you know, we could only hope that certain universities or scientific organizations or other entities would become involved and provide us the kind of resources that it would take to do these kinds of high-tech investigations. But, you know, I'm not aware of anyone ever doing that over the Pine Barrens or anywhere else. So I imagine that there are some organizations, you know, that are probably working on things like that in terms of the Pacific Northwest and Bigfoot research, or at least I've heard that. You know, I know people like Rick Knoll and so forth are pretty high-tech type of people and are constantly trying to develop technologies like that we could utilize to try to find some of these cryptids.
Well, if you do have questions for Ken tonight and you'd like to call in, our toll-free number is 1-877-677-2858. Again, 877-677-2858. Or you can call 724-824-1494. Again, 724-824-1494. We'll be taking your calls all throughout the evening, plus questions in the chat room, like Sharon Lee asked and Ceiling Cat asked some good questions.
In fact, if I may, Eric, it may be better if they do call in with their questions, as most of us aren't in chat right now, so we'd be able to get them better.
Yeah, we're having issues with Skype. Skype, of all nights for Skype to act up, it just had to do tonight. One of our
and we've been doing pretty good, but you know, every once in a while we do have a glitch. You know, I want to ask you, Ken, about the bird woman at Da Nang incident that you had mentioned in the book. Now, I know there were others. I had written about other flying humanoid type creatures or whatever that were seen during the Vietnam War, but this one in particular, could you describe that one for everybody?
Yeah, the Bird Woman of Da Nang is a great story that I guess was originally published in Fate magazine years ago, and there was a gentleman named Don Worley, and I guess he had met a soldier or a gentleman that was stationed in Vietnam during the Vietnam War. This is in 1967. And as this particular soldier sat, and he was a Marine, sat sentry with some other soldiers, they claimed that they saw something approaching them, kind of flying overhead. And as it got closer, they were able to make out its form. And basically what they described was a hideous-looking woman, or what appeared to be a woman, because she had breasts and long, flowing hair, with long, membranous, bat-like wings, and you know, completely black in color, and kind of furry-looking, I guess, is what the way they described her. And what's weird is that she had arms in addition to wings, and that her arms seemed kind of very withered and weak. And the weirdest thing is that she seemed to give off, in their mind, kind of a greenish glow. And so she kind of soared about 20 feet above their heads, quietly above their heads, looking down at them. And, you know, they were dumbfounded, of course, didn't know what to do, or I guess it didn't occur to them at that time to take a shot or do anything, take any action. They just kind of watched this thing fly overhead. So pretty weird and creepy case, probably one of my favorites in terms of the description, because it's just such a bizarre situation. Now, one interesting comparison I'd like to draw is between this particular bird woman of Da Nang and the Scottish Scree, and that's spelled S-K-R-E-E. The Scottish Scree is a folkloric being, very much like a harpy, but, you know, very similar description. And in particular, there's a Welsh variation, and I don't even know if I want to try to pronounce the name here because I'll probably slaughter it, but it's basically the translation is night hag or slobber witch. And the name is actually, I'll try to pronounce it here, it's like Grok I Ribin. And this particular hag-like creature or harpy-like creature is said to kind of fly low over the swamps and the creeks at night. And but the interesting comparison is that this creature is said to have very weak, withered arms, much like the Bird Woman of Da Nang. Mm-hmm. And going back to the Scottish Scree for a moment, there's a very famous incident where apparently a Scottish Scree overflew a battlefield, and this was in the 1700s, and many people saw this figure flying overhead. And shortly thereafter, when the battle ensued, there were 1,500 Jacobite soldiers that were slaughtered there. Mm. So it's one of those connections in terms of having a, I guess, kind of a war setting, and one of these flying humanoids, you know, being seen by many people before the catastrophe or the slaughter, so to speak. So, you know, it goes back to that whole notion that these flying humanoid beings are portents or harbingers of destruction or death.
How many of these type of beings are actually, that you know of, that show up during wartime? And, I mean, because, you know, Vietnam and then the battle you talk about in Scotland, are there others that you know of?
Well, there's a case in Korea, during the Korean War, similar to the one we were talking about earlier. There was a soldier who was standing sentry in Korea in the 1950s, 52, I believe, and he saw this birdman, this feathered birdman creature flying overhead, and actually did take a shot at it, and apparently the thing vanished. And when he went and told his commanding officer about the incident, hesitantly, I imagine, the commanding officer informed him that another soldier had claimed to have seen the same type of thing. Now, those are probably the only notable cases that I'm aware of, although in my book there are at least a couple of other incidents where I guess what you could characterize as flying humanoid beings were seen on military bases.
Right.
One was, you know, the famous case of Spring Hill Jack, who was apparently seen at a British military base in the 1800s, and a more recent incident occurs a woman up here in Fort Hood in Texas, where I live, who claims that she saw this floating humanoid figure that was kind of this flying over the Air Force base, although in her opinion it wasn't a winged humanoid. It was simply a man-like figure that was floating along on some type of invisible platform or something. So those are the only cases I'm really aware of.
Now, Ken, let me ask you, for our listeners and especially myself, I've heard of Spring Hill Jack, but I'm not really familiar with the character or the cryptid. Could you explain a little more in detail what exactly or who exactly is Spring Hill Jack?
Well, Spring Hill Jack, and I definitely wouldn't characterize him as a cryptid, but he's a great figure in Freudian literature. Spring Hill Jack is probably a combination of a supervillain and some kind of urban folk hero, if you want to color him as a hero, but basically, back in the early 1800s, 1835, I believe, was the first reported sighting, this figure known as Spring Hill Jack was reported around the suburbs of London. And the descriptions are essentially a tall, thin man wearing a tight-fitting uniform, almost like an oilskin-type uniform, and wearing a cape. And the name Spring Hill Jack is a reference to his alleged ability to bound effortlessly through the air in defiance of gravity, basically jumping from rooftop to rooftop and moving at inhuman speeds and inhuman ways. And the really creepy parts are that Spring Hill Jack was said to sometimes wear a helmet, to have long, steely claws, red-burning eyes, and to sometimes exhale or breathe a blue noxious flame into people's faces. And originally Spring Hill Jack was accused of attacking young women in the suburbs of London and ripping at their clothes, assaulting them. And it got to the point where there was a state of hysteria around London, and the rulership of London at the time actually formed vigilance committees and posses to go out and hunt for Spring Hill Jack. So those were the first references to Spring Hill Jack. Many, many newspaper articles coming out in the 1830s. And then he seemed to disappear for a while and resurface occasionally from time to time. Now, there is one very recent Spring Hill Jack report that I include in the book, and this is from 2011, I believe, or no, actually it was 2012, last year, where where a family was driving through a London suburb and claimed that this shadowy figure bounded across the road in front of them at inhuman speed. And they didn't get a good look at him, but they thought that they may have actually seen Spring Hill Jack. So who knows, maybe he's still around. Again, not really a flying humanoid in the traditional sense, but the fact that he kind of bounds through the air, and I just thought it was a great story that needed to be retold. So I just
he seems to like to show up once in a while, because you're talking about Scott Martin and his family that that they saw it on the roadside, and I think about 3 weeks later, a cab driver in London saw something similar, and I think there was a, if my memory serves me right, another incident that happened in 1986 outside of London.
Yeah, that's true. There's a
this Spring Hill Jack just seemed to show up on the craziest times. You know, it's a weird phenomenon.
Yeah, he's kind of like the 30-year locust or something. He just he shows up every few decades and makes an appearance and then kind of disappears again. So, pretty cool story. Pretty weird stuff.
The other character, or cryptid, whatever you want to call it, that you talk about in your book is the Houston Batman. And we talked about that at the Parafest. It's a fascinating story that only happened, I believe you said, maybe once or twice.
Yeah, the Houston Batman is very near and dear to my heart because I lived in Houston for many years, and we don't, unfortunately, in Houston, we didn't have a lot of cryptids or weird stories, so this was always a good one. The Houston Batman is a very well-known story in Fortean circles, and basically the story is that three residents of Houston were sitting out on their patio one night in 1953, June of 1953. And, of course, Houston is very hot and humid, and I imagine that these people didn't have air conditioning. So it was a restless night, and they decided, it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and they decided to just sit out on their porch and talk. And at first, one of the witnesses was a woman named Hilda Walker. She observed a shadowy figure that was moving across the lawn, and she thought it might be like a moth or a large insect kind of reflected in a light, a street light. But then they noticed that this shadowy figure seemed to land on the branch of a large pecan tree in their yard. And as their eyes adjusted to the light, they could actually make out his form, and they described him as looking, you know, like a human, but about 6 feet tall, and with two wings attached to his shoulders. And the really strange part is that this so-called Batman was apparently emitting a dull yellowish glow, and he seemed to be dressed in a black tight-fitting uniform, similar to one worn by a paratrooper, including a helmet and knee-length boots. And he kind of swayed back and forth on this pecan branch for a few moments as they watched him, and then eventually the light began to fade out, and the figure literally vanished into thin air. And about that time, one of the young ladies who was present actually screamed out. And then just a few minutes later, as they, you know, were sitting on their porch still, they heard a loud swooshing noise, as they described it, and watched a torpedo-shaped object shoot up into the sky from across the street. Well, Hilda Walker was so freaked out by this particular incident that she went to the Houston police the next morning and filed a report, and subsequently it made it into the Houston Chronicle newspaper that next day. And they, of course, dubbed it the Batman. So that's really the only real incident that I'm aware of, although I do reference in my book a particular another incident where I met some young men in the Houston area who claimed, and this was like back in the 1980s, who claimed that they were working at the Houston Bel Air Theater, and they were looking downtown, and they noticed a large man-like figure perched on top of a building, very kind of crouched down, and they could tell that he was wearing a helmet, and he appeared to be truly gigantic. Now, they didn't see any wings or anything else, but they sat there for several minutes looking at this figure that was kind of peeking at them from the top of this building, And again, all they could discern is that it was a giant of a man wearing a helmet. So I don't know if that was the Houston Batman or not, but that's probably the closest I've ever come to maybe hearing about any other secondary reports of the Houston Batman. I think it's probably just a one-off story, but a great one.
You had reported on the gargoyle sightings in Texas. Now, you know, I had never heard any gargoyle stories. Well, I may have, but I really didn't look much into it here in the United States. I know there have been several down in Puerto Rico, and I think Puerto Rico has been the big, you know, where most of them have been coming from. What are people saying about this phenomenon, especially the ones that you reported out of Texas?
Well, I don't think there's much you can say. I mean, gargoyles, as we all know, belong on the sides of buildings, and
yeah,
they're not supposed to be animated. They're just supposed to kind of sit there. They're made out of stone or whatever. But there are some famous cases of gargoyle-like creatures. Now, I personally include the Jersey Devil in that particular category.
I was just going to ask you that because. The descriptions that people would give to the Jersey Devil or whatever they were seeing in the Pine Barrens very much sounded like gargoyles. And I was going to ask, it's funny you said that, I was going to ask you, well, what about the Jersey Devil? I mean, is this the same type of thing?
Well, to me it is, because if you look at the traditional interpretation of the Jersey Devil, and of course there are different variations of that, But the primary description of the Jersey Devil, or the enduring image that we all have, is basically a bipedal creature that seems to blend different animal characteristics. For example, most people have described it as having a body like a kangaroo with these bat-like wings attached, a long head like a horse or a dog. Some people have described it as having horns. Sort of like a ram's horns, I guess. Large red glowing eyes. That's kind of a repeating motif as far as these flying humanoids go. And a long snake-like tail with a fork on the end, kind of a devil's tail, I guess. And hoofs. So kind of a mishmash of different animal characteristics. Now, I have found other similar gargoyle reports, as you mentioned, from here in Texas, mostly in West Texas. My colleague Nick Redfern actually uncovered a story from a small town in West Texas where these towering gargoyle-like creatures that stood 9 feet tall were seen to emerge from a cellar on this old deserted, next to this old deserted property, and in front of several teenagers who were kind of sneaking around the property. My favorite story is actually that of the Brentford Griffin. And there was actually a book written about the Brentford Griffin. It's very rare. It's actually, I guess you could say it's more of a pamphlet. But the Brentford Griffin was a gargoyle-like creature that was reported in the London suburb of Brentford back in the 1980s. And the primary witness was a young man named Kevin Chippendale, a telephone worker who was walking down the street one day, and he claims he looked up in the sky and saw this thing that he described as a basically a dog with wings, kind of flying through the air. And the really cool thing about that story that I like is he said that it was moving as if it was in slow motion. But he actually saw this thing on a couple of different occasions from the exact same spot. So, you know, many of these kind of variations of different gargoyle-type creatures, I really don't know what they could be, but, you know, at least in my own mind, they kind of fit in with the other, you know, flying creatures or flying humanoids. In terms of just the really weird aspect to these cases.
Well, there have been a lot of sightings not far from me, but near to Eric out in western Pennsylvania. I mean, and you may have talked to Stan about those when you talked to him. Back in the end of 2011 and then the beginning of 2012, there were like three different sightings of these. One was actually described as a dragon. The other one was described as a gargoyle. I mean, you know, you know, I don't know how many of these reports you get, but for three of those reports to come out of that one area in a matter of 4 or 5 months, it's pretty unusual.
Well, if I can jump in there real quick, just to let you guys a little update on that case. The March 2011 sighting of the gargoyle in Butler County, another researcher in that area by the name of Dan Hagman, who runs the Butler Organization for Research of the Unexplained, investigated 4 or 5 additional cases of people
really?
Claiming to see the same type of gargoyle-like creature around the same area.
Oh, interesting.
It just is never publicly released.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Well, that is cool. I appreciate you bringing that up. And as with many cryptids, I think a lot of times when we do get these reports, don't you get the sense that sometimes we're just scratching the surface? That maybe for every one that's reported, there are several other incidents involving the same or similar creatures that people obviously are hesitant to come forward and talk about.
Well, that's
due
just
to the ridicule factor, you know. So,
and if it weren't for the internet. Personally, I don't think a lot of what we do get would even be, you know, even be disclosed anyway. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I think because the advent of the internet nowadays, we're getting more reports than we used to get. you know, I know back when I started back in the late 70s and early 80s, I mean, we never got reports of this type of stuff.
Yeah, it is a great resource for us. I think we're very lucky as investigators to have that.
Yeah.
But you bring up another good point that I kind of would like to just comment on real quick. You know, long before the internet and a lot of these older cases that we talk about, you know, from the 70s and 80s, you oftentimes we know about these particular incidents because the eyewitnesses actually went to the police or went to the newspaper and reported that.
Yeah, there's a record of it. Absolutely. Yeah.
To me, that adds a lot of validity to a case and an eyewitness, because think about it. Who in their right mind would want to go to the police and file a report that they saw some type of, you know, non-existent creature and, you know, put their name out there in the newspapers and so forth? I guess there are people out there that would maybe want attention and be doing it for all the wrong reasons, but...
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think back in the day, people that were making those types of reports, you know, I think that speaks very strongly to, you know, the emotional impact and the trauma that's experienced by eyewitnesses to the point where they feel that you know, that these things could be dangerous and that they have a duty or an obligation to report them and to, you know, risk prosecution and so forth.
Yeah, guys, we got a phone call coming in for Ken, so we're going to go ahead and add this phone call to the conversation. Welcome to BTE Radio. You have a question for Ken tonight?
Hello. Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine. Who is this and where are you calling from?
I'm the guy that saw the thing in Butler County back in March of 2011.
Oh, cool.
Very cool. Thanks for calling in tonight.
Yeah.
Would you care to recount your sighting with us?
Yeah, I can do that. That thing's actually been seen by several other people besides myself, because I almost didn't report it. And one of the reasons I didn't report it was because I was really not into this at all. But ever since this has happened, I've been doing some research on it and trying to figure out what it was. And I contacted Stan Gordon because I found him on the internet and knew that from his website, he was a local guy and everything, and I gave him a call just basically to ask him about it and see if anything else had come up from it. But the basic story on it is, I was driving home from a business that I owned, and it was late at night. I crested the top of a hill, and as I was coming down the other side, there's a pretty deep ravine that runs through there. I saw something on the right-hand side of the road, and I saw, it looked like reflective eyes, like from a deer. And I wasn't quite sure exactly what it was, so I actually stepped on the gas to speed up some to see what it was, and then I started laying on the brakes pretty hard. And all of a sudden, this thing stood up. And when it stood up, I mean, the hair on the back of my head stood up. I was like, whoa. And I could not believe for a minute what I was seeing. And then it basically started across the road, and there was a one of those signs, state signs, about a little over 8 feet tall on the side of the road, and the thing basically covered the sign as it went across the road. And it covered the road in just a few steps. And like I told him, the skin was very leathery, and it would literally look like it had wings folded up on its back. It wasn't like it was carrying anything on its back because its arms were down, and its hands basically looked like claws. And my vehicle that I have has a super high-intensity lights on it, and sometimes that'll make the coloring on stuff look a little different at night. But it crossed the road basically in about three steps, and to me it looked like its knees bent backwards as it was going. It was really, really freaky looking. I never got a view of the front of it, but its face from where I saw basically looked flat, and then the ears on it looked like sort of like flaps sticking back on the side of its head. And the only way I could describe the stand, the head basically went up to a point, like a crest on it, and all I could think of was those guys that do that real fast skiing on TV with those weird-shaped helmets. That's about the only thing that I could do to describe what it looked like. As I got up to where it went into the woods, I rolled my window down, and I could hear like the brush crashing and dogs barking really bad off to my left. And I asked around because I know a few people in the area, and that night somebody's dog came up missing right within 200 yards of where it happened at. And I had started inquiring and asking people around the area what all they have been seeing up there. And there's a guy that I know that lives a little bit further up the river, and he actually had a Bigfoot sighting last summer up there. And he and his son were out on four-wheelers. They went across a bridge, and down in the bottom of the stream, they thought they smelled something, and they stopped, and this thing stood up and went up the embankment in, you know, two steps, and it was in the woods and gone. I know what I saw. I will swear till the day that I die, it was not a Bigfoot. It had no hair on it whatsoever.
Did the drawing that Stan had with your story, did you do that drawing? Yes.
I did. Okay. I just sort of skipped out real quick.
Ken, I just sent the link over to you, so you'll have it.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, this is pretty wild looking. It does look like a dragon. I remember seeing the drawing before, but and how high did you say you thought it stood up?
Well, I went back and measured the road sign. The road sign at the top of it was 8 feet 3 inches.
Wow.
And from where I was, as it crossed in front of the road sign, it covered the entire road sign. Wow. Now, that sign is on the side of a bank, like on the
yeah.
a side of the road where it's weeds and grass and stuff. And it's up off the road a little ways. It's but amazing. As it passed it, I couldn't see the sign at all.
Hmm. That's amazing. Wow.
Well, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that. That's utterly fascinating and incredibly creepy and weird.
It definitely is. Yeah, we appreciate you calling in.
I do have one follow-up question before we let you go. Could you did anything unusual, in your opinion, happen to you, or did you experience anything as a result of that encounter as far as, like, bad dreams or, you know, ghostly experiences or anything like that? Because that seems to be a recurring theme that I've found with some of these flying humanoid witnesses, that they've had kind of aftermath or residual effects from these sightings.
No. I actually thought that I had seen it about 4 days later, but because I couldn't get a good visual on it, I'm not going to say that I did. But there is a lot of stuff being seen in that area. There is a lot of stuff up there going on.
I can attest to that. I was in your neighborhood earlier today.
I went over to visit with someone just 3 days ago and was coming back, and on a little side road over there was a tree about 60 feet tall, and it was probably big enough you couldn't put both hands around it, and this tree was being shaken by something, and I mean shaken violently by something. And I guarantee you it was in the area that you were in. because there's a lot of stuff going on up there.
Wow.
Yeah, I have your number, and I'll be getting in touch with you very shortly to give you a call off the air, and we'll talk a little more.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, anytime.
Well, thank you for calling in tonight and sharing that with us. We really do appreciate it. That's a fascinating story, and I know Ken written about it in his book, Encounters with Flying Humanoids, but it's great to hear from an eyewitness retell their story.
Yes, thank you so much for calling in.
I will let you know this. I am now traveling with a GoPro on my dash.
There you go. Smart man. Smart man. Well, thanks again for calling in, and I'll be in touch with you, like I said, probably in the next couple of days because there's some things I'd like to discuss with you privately.
Yes, sir. No problem.
All right. You have a wonderful night.
Okay, thanks.
Take
care.
What a great eyewitness story.
Well, I know when Stan told me about it originally, freaked me out because, but to listen to the witness, you get a better sense of what he ran into. So, wow.
Yeah, and I've had the pleasure of meeting him in person. He attended one of the events I was at, and we spoke.
Okay.
We spoke at great length about his encounter and some of the things that are going on up there. And this man is definitely credible with his background. I don't want to get into, discussing his background, but very credible individual. And if he says that's what he saw, I'm pretty convinced that's what he saw.
Ken, you were mentioning earlier about these cases where people, years ago would report it to the police and they would have, they had to have a record of it. And that's what kind of impresses me about one case in particular, is that the Loveland Frog case, because that thing was actually seen by police officers and it was documented and people are still seeing something in that area.
Well, yeah, that's a great story. And, I know our colleague Lyle Blackburn has just written a book about the Lizard Man, and I think he probably discusses the Loveland Frog at length too. But, now you got my curiosity piqued because, like most researchers, I'm real familiar with the classic cases involving the police officers. But what do you know in terms of recent sightings of the Loveland Frog?
I had a woman contact me a couple of years ago, maybe about 2 or 3 years ago. She had moved into a house on the side, right on the river, and where these sightings had been at, and she had seen something coming up the bank that looked like a man, looked like a frog. I'll have to dig it out. I'll dig it out. I'll send it off to you. It was pretty freaky. No, it's not in my book.
Okay.
No, I don't have it in the book. But I'll send it off to Ken. And you said, that's right, I had to send, maybe I'll send it to Lyle, too. Because
yeah,
I didn't,
sure, Lyle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had just thought about that. But that case really impressed me because, like you said, even UFO abduction cases, these cases that are actually, reported to police officers are actually experienced by police officers. They have so much detail to them. And the credibility is there. And, that's a great point.
Yeah, and, while we're discussing that, this is a nice segue because actually there's a very famous case that I discuss in the book where a police officer in Mexico claims he was actually attacked by a flying humanoid.
I was just going to ask you about that. You read my mind.
Yeah, so, and I interviewed this particular gentleman. Now, he doesn't speak English, so we had a translator, but several times during the course of our interview, and this happened back in 2004, and I interviewed him in 2009 for an episode of Monster Quest. And so even 5 years later, this gentleman was this police officer was breaking down and weeping throughout the course of the interview as he kind of recalled these incidents. But according to him, his name was Leonardo Samaniego, and at the time he was a kind of a rookie on the force, but he was patrolling a neighborhood on the south side of Monterrey, Mexico, known as Guadalupe. And this was in the middle of the night, and he was actually looking for a burglary suspect. And as he pulled down this one street called Alamo Street, he saw something kind of, float down from a large tree ahead of him. And at first he thought it was a giant black garbage bag or something because it was just kind of a big black mass. So he kind of stepped on the brakes, and as this thing came down, he noticed or he observed that it was actually what he described as a witch And he said that she was basically floating in the air, that she seemed to be adorned in a black hooded robe, and that her skin was dark, very dark brown, and she had giant black lidless eyes and sharp claws. And, of course, he was totally freaked out at this point, didn't know what to do. So he threw his car into reverse, and as he was backing down the street, he was simultaneously he was on the radio calling for backup. And when he, you know, he was kind of looking behind him because he was in reverse. When he got to the end of the block, stepped on his brakes and turned around, this thing had shot at lightning speed onto the roof of his patrol car and was actually clawing at him through the windshield on his patrol car. And this apparently was too much for poor Leonardo to bear, so he blacked out. And a few minutes later, he was revived by some other responding officers and some EMS workers that had shown up at the scene, and they tested his heart rate and different things, and he was evidently in shock. And they took him to the local hospital, and he was tested. Being a police officer, they tested him for alcohol and drugs and different other psychiatric tests, and they couldn't find anything wrong with him or anything out of the ordinary. And this made big news in Mexico. It was carried on all the local television stations. And, you know, of course, we have to remember Mexico is a very different culture from the United States. Now, they're, you know, in many ways, they're very devoutly religious and also superstitious people, culture. And so they, you know, they basically referred to this thing as the Bruja, which means witch of Guadalupe. And after the story went public, Leonardo learned that some of his colleagues on the police force had claimed that they had also seen this witch in different occasions, but they had never wanted to come forward and talk about it until this thing happened to him. So, pretty startling case, and another example of a different type or variation of flying humanoid.
That's a fascinating case indeed. And what I'd like to do when we come back from the break, Ken, is talk a little bit more about it, because I know there have been other people in Mexico reporting seeing similar flying humanoid-type creatures fitting that description that the officer gave. So we'll talk about that when we come back. Plus, I'm going to talk to you more about some of these strange cases, such as the Van Meter visitor. We had Chad Lewis on the show a few weeks back talking about that case, and I want to get your thoughts on that. Plus, we'll talk more about the book, Encounters with Flying Humanoids. Take your calls at 877-677-2858 or field your questions in the chat room. We're going to head to break. This is BTE Radio live here on the Para-X Radio Network. Our guest tonight is Ken Gerhard, and more with Ken after we come back.
BTE Radio will be right back with more alternative talk radio with an attitude. Tell your mamas.
Someone's gonna tell you lies, cut you down to size. Don't do me like that. Don't do me like that. Well, I love you, baby. Don't do me like that. All I wanna do when I wake up in the morning is see your eyes, Roseanne.
And welcome back to tonight's program. This is BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio, and I think our jukebox got stuck. I had to give it a good whack to get the music started there. But we're back live on the air here on Para-X, and we want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. We've got a great guest on the show, and we've got a packed chat room. I'm just blown away by the numbers in the chat room tonight and listening live to the show. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. You can catch us live every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Here on the Para-X Radio Network. And if you like what you hear, tell your friends, spread the word on Facebook, and you know, continue to listen in, because we'd love to hear that folks are enjoying the show, and we do this all for you. So thank you for tuning into the program tonight. Ken Gerhard is our guest tonight. We're talking about encounters with flying humanoids. Mothman, Man-Birds, Gargoyles, and Other Winged Beasts is the name of the new book that he's just published, and it's been released in the last couple of weeks. Ken, where can we get a copy of this book from?
Well, of course, it's available online from major book retailers such as Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And I've also learned that it is going to be featured by Barnes & Noble locations as part of their Halloween promotional table, so you should be able to go to any local Barnes & Noble location and find a copy.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Congratulations. I'll share with you real quick a funny story, if I may. There was a book that was, you've probably seen these books, the weird state books, like Weird Ohio, Weird Virginia.
Yep.
Well, there was one released for Weird Pennsylvania a few years back. I believe Matt Lake was one of the authors of the book. And he did an interview with me many, many years ago for that book. I had forgotten all about it. And I happened to be in Barnes & Noble around the time the book was released. And they had a huge display of the Weird Pennsylvania book, plus other books about Pennsylvania ghosts and whatnot. And this woman on the opposite side of the display table was flipping through the book, and she come across apparently the interview that I did. And I'm standing on the other side just perusing through the books, looking at them, and she says out loud, she goes, "Boy, there's a real Bigfoot hunter in Pennsylvania. I'd like to meet him. Eric Altman, his sounds pretty interesting." And I looked across the table and said, "How you doing?" And she just looked at me like, "Huh?" And I said, "I'm Eric Altman." She said, "No, you're not." And I said, "Yeah, I am. I'm the guy that you're reading the interview about." She's like, "Oh, my God, that's so cool." And then she flipped out and made a big scene. But it was pretty funny to be in that time and place to have that happen. But I wish
good
you
story.
Much success on your book, Ken. I'm about halfway through it, and some of these stories are just phenomenal. And they're creepy, too, like the Owlman over in England. We talked about that. The Houston Batman, of course, the Bat Squatch. That's a great one. But getting back to these flying humanoids, creatures from Mexico, one that the police officer had seen, and you mentioned that other police officers had seen, reported as seeing as well. I know that for some reason over the last few years, many more people have come forward reporting seeing something similar. Are you familiar with those additional reports, and what can you tell us about them?
Well, yes, I dedicated a chapter in the book to what are referred to as UFHs, and that stands for Unidentified Flying Humanoids. That moniker was actually coined by a Mexican UFO researcher named Santiago Ituria. And, you know, there was one videotape that was released after Leonardo's encounter with this so-called flying witch of a what appears to be a hooded figure kind of flying up in the air over Monterey. There's also a famous piece of footage that many of you people have probably seen, and it was featured on some different TV shows like Science Fact or Fake, where there's a hooded figure that steps off of a mountain called Las Mitras and kind of floats through the air. Now, most of the videos, which can be found on YouTube, that show these UFHs or unidentified flying humanoids, basically what you see are human-like figures, and they're so high up that it really is hard to distinguish any figures, but you definitely can see arms and legs hanging down and, you know, what appears to be a human-like form, but they're not winged. They're just kind of floating up in the air, kind of high up in the stratosphere, and they were first observed beginning in 2000 by different Mexican UFO researchers who, you know, were looking up in the sky with binoculars and cameras, and they began to videotape these figures flying overhead. So kind of another distinct variation of the flying humanoid phenomenon. Now, there are some good skeptical arguments out there that, in fact, what people might be seeing are actually man-sized balloons or man-shaped balloons or dirigibles or groups of balloons that people are releasing up into the air. And, you know, they appear to be somewhat balloon-like. I mean, they're just kind of floating up and moving along slowly. There have also been some reports of these different types of UFHs, unidentified flying humanoids in North America and also Europe. In fact, I gleaned a couple of reports from Lon's website as far as the Polish cases. So, you know, in my mind, they're most definitely linked to the UFO phenomenon because they seem to be sighted in locations where UFOs have been seen. You know, and for those people that might counter or argue, well, you know, it could be a human wearing a jetpack or something like that. The people that have observed and videotaped these figures have not heard any noises that would indicate an engine. They have not seen any, you know, chemtrails or exhaust trails. So whatever these figures are, they appear to be flying around of their own free will and volition. So pretty strange.
Yeah, they definitely are. I've seen some of the videos that you're discussing and that are on YouTube, and They actually ran a program, if I'm not mistaken, on Monster Quest, I think, about the flying humanoids.
Yeah, I was in that episode. They sent me down to Mexico. Now, I was I was investigating those videotapes as well as Leonardo's sighting of the Flying Witch. But there's another case that happened right around that time that was, you know, I thought even more bizarre and more interesting, and that is a student in northern Mexico in a place called La Junta in the Chihuahua state was driving home one night from university, and he saw this figure hunched by the side of the road, and when he slowed down, it rose up, and he could see that it was basically a Mothman-type creature with, he described it as having four wings and kind of a dome-like head, black furry head, really weird looking, and it actually chased his car, much like the Mothman did, because he sped off, and this thing was flying alongside his car and peering at him through the window. So that was pretty kind of a weird case. That happened in, I believe, March of 2009. 2 months later, I was flying down to Mexico to investigate, you know, all of these different flying humanoid cases. And what was kind of creepy is when I flew into the airport in Monterrey, it was right about the time the H1N1 virus was going on down there.
Oh, yikes.
So as I landed in the airport, there was basically a quarantine going on, and there were all these officials with, you know, wearing surgical gloves and masks, and, you know, they were testing people, you know, and keeping people from coming and going because they were worried about this virus. So that was kind of weird because, you know, I wondered kind of to myself if there was a connection, again, between these flying humanoid, recent flying humanoid reports and this virus that was going on, because it's, you know, similar to the Silver Bridge collapse in Point Pleasant and similar to some of the cases we discussed earlier. There do seem to be, at least in some circumstances, an ambiguous connection or link between these flying appearances of these flying humanoids and kind of catastrophic events. And death.
Yeah, I see your point. That is kind of bizarre. Maybe they're harbingers of doom, or they're forewarning us of something impending coming. Something to think about.
Isn't that the episode where they had you climbing up the cliffs?
Yeah, we went up and we explored some caves. Now,
yeah,
that was mostly just good television because, you know, they wanted me to do something, and they figured, well, if there was a flying humanoid, we'd probably live in a cave, right? Like a bat or something. So, you know, I love exploring caves. It's one of my passions. So when I had an opportunity to get to go into some of these vast cave systems, I have to say the one really remarkable aspect of that whole experience was the location they took us to. It's called La Huasteca, and it's in the Sierra Madre Mountains south of Monterrey. And, I mean, it was basically one of the most incredibly vast and remote areas I've ever been to in my life. I mean, people often, you know, when we talk about different cryptids, people often counter with, well, you know, the world is all explored and, you know, we've seen it, we've been everywhere and this and that. Well, you know, it just kind of drives that whole point home that there are many, many places on planet Earth that humans do not go that are vastly uninhabited and remote, and I think that bodes very well for the potential existence of some of these creatures and undiscovered cryptids.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the area where you live at, they've had some amazing sightings of pterosaurs or thunderbirds, and I do know the terrain is pretty similar to that where they have a lot of these caves and high cliffs in these valleys, and you know, I know people have speculated that there's a good possibility that these flying cryptids in your area could actually live in those. So, I mean, what's your take on that? Do you think that it is a possibility? Because there have been a lot of sightings.
There have been a lot, and that's, you know, my first book, Big Bird, Modern Sightings of Flying Monsters. Of course, I address that phenomenon here in my home state of Texas of sightings of thunderbirds and specifically pterodactyl or pterosaur types of creatures, because those are ongoing. And, you know, you just kind of made a nice tie in there, because we're really not that far from where I live. Right across the border, you get into the mountains and the Sierra Madres.
Right.
And so people have often remarked to me, well, you know, there couldn't be pterosaurs living in Texas, I mean, they would be seen more often. Well, you know, my own personal theory is that they actually live in Mexico in some of these remote mountain areas, and perhaps they're seen on those occasions when they kind of stray out of those areas and fly across the border into southern Texas and other parts of the Southwest, like New Mexico, Arizona, and so forth. So I would like to share a recent, very recent flying humanoid report that came in after my book had gone to print. It's kind of a cool story.
Sure.
A gentleman named Trey Austin, and he lives out in Big Spring, Texas, which is kind of in the panhandle. Back in September of last year, he and his wife were kind of standing outside at night, and Trey tells me that they looked up in the air and they saw this flying humanoid kind of soaring overhead, and it actually got very low and really just went right over their heads. And he's actually drawn some sketches for me and stuff, and they're quite remarkable. He describes this thing as standing, or he estimated that this thing would stand about 14 feet tall, that it had giant black angelic wings, feathered wings, long black flowing hair, and kind of a flat face with deep sunken eyes. And, you know, its feet were kind of indented, and it was holding its arms along its side and, you know, high cheekbones. So a very vivid description.
Wow.
And he said that this thing just basically just flew right over their heads and looked down at him, and his wife is very been very shaken by the whole experience. She doesn't really even want to talk about it. But, you know, just another example that these reports of these flying humanoids are ongoing.
That sounds like some out of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, well, and as I mentioned earlier, I mean, they were probably just scratching the surface, because what one person reports, maybe a few other people have seen and don't talk about.
Yeah.
Now, this particular case also ties in very well to something I write about in the book known as the Birdman of Chaparral. And this is a birdman or a flying humanoid creature that has been reported in and around the town of Chaparral, New Mexico, by several people, and I have interviewed a handful of people from that area that that have seen this thing, and that's not too terribly far from where this most recent report has come.
That's fascinating. It really is. It's very interesting.
Well, I was telling these guys off the air, I just love flying cryptids. I mean, that's something I've always liked, the Mothman. And then to tie in with all these other crazy things that are flying around, and
these rays,
these rays.
And, that's great.
Oh,
yeah.
God, you know, I don't.
One thing I wanted to get your opinion on before we go off the air tonight, Ken, the Van Meter Visitor. We had Chad Lewis on the show a few weeks back, and we had a great program with him and learned quite a bit about this strange bat-like creature that showed up in Van Meter, Iowa, back in I guess about 110 years ago. And what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, obviously Chad would be much more knowledgeable than I am. You know, I gleaned some of his research, as well as Brad Steiger and others that had discussed this creature. But it's a great story. You know, this as you indicate, a kind of a bat-like creature, but bipedal, walking on its hind legs, was seen by you know, several residents of Van Meter, Iowa, back in 1904, and it made quite a dramatic appearance. The first sighting was apparently a doctor who was asleep in his office one night, and in kind of the main part of town, and he heard this horrendous noise and saw a flash of light outside his window. And when he went outside to investigate, wisely armed with a shotgun, this thing descended from the sky and landed in front of him. And he claimed that it was towering, you know, I believe like 9 or 10 feet tall, and basically a gargoyle type of creature. But what's really weird is that it had this glowing light in the middle of its forehead. That's something that we haven't really heard before, kind of like a third eye.
Right.
And that once it departed the scene, I guess he took a shot at it, that the smell of sulfur was still lingering in the air. And the thing was seen other times that night. Tracks were found the following morning, and then, you know, the local townspeople formed a posse to go out and look for it. And the last time it was seen, it was with a companion, and it was flying down into an old deserted mine shaft. So just, you know, again, another one of these great stories about these flying humanoid or gargoyle-type creatures so many of them out there. And, you know, that's the one thing that I hope people get from the book is kind of the big picture view in terms of it's not just about Mothman. As great as a story as Mothman is, this is a very prevalent phenomenon, perhaps more prevalent than people realize. There are a lot of these things out there, whatever they are, and they're still being seen to this day.
I was going to say, I certainly didn't realize it myself that there were this many flying cryptids or flying humanoid-like creatures out there. Mothman, Jersey Devil, you know, some of these bat-like creatures we've heard of from time to time. But you cover a wide gambit of different creatures in this book. I strongly suggest that you pick up this new book by Ken Gerhard, Encounters with Flying Humanoids. Where can they get it again from if they're interested in picking it up, Ken?
Amazon.com online, Barnes & Noble online, perhaps some other online book retailers. I'm sure if you just do a search on Encounters with Flying Humanoids, different links will come up. And hopefully go pick one up at your local Barnes & Noble store if you're the kind of person that wants to go out and kind of thumb through the book before you buy it.
Fantastic. Ken, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend. Great to have you on the show tonight. A great conversation. I've learned so much more about flying humanoids than I knew before. So a great time with you this evening. And I'm looking forward to seeing you again at the next crypto conference or paranormal conference we go to together.
Well, that sounds like fun. And as always, gentlemen, it's been an extreme honor to be on here with you tonight. I always have a great time talking about cryptids and all kinds of weird creatures with you. So let's make a date to do it again real soon.
Absolutely.
Our pleasure.
Yeah, the pleasure is all ours. We really enjoy having you on, Ken, and we'll get you back on here soon with us again to talk more cryptids and more strange and unusual things, because we have a lot in common in that area for sure.
All right. Sounds like a plan.
Have a wonderful night, my friend, and we'll talk with you soon.
Okay. Take care, everyone. Thanks for everyone who listened in.
Have a great night.
All right. You too.
Well, there you have it, folks.
Good night. There he is, Ken Gerhard, the man, the myth, the legend, the author of Encounters with Flying Humanoids, Big Bird, about the Thunderbirds in Texas, and he's co-authored some other books with Nick Redfern, for example. He's written for many magazines, appeared on many different television programs, and you can catch him just on Coast to Coast this past week in the archives. A really great guy and a good friend of the show.
Indeed. Great to have him on the program. Lots to go over tonight. And man, my head is just busting with information.
Oh, I agree. I agree totally. A great show tonight. We want to thank everybody who tuned in live tonight to the program. And thanks for all the great questions. Thanks to the gentleman who called in, sharing his encounter with the strange flying humanoid-like creature that walked across the road in his front of his car in 2011. We appreciate that call. And a great night for radio, guys.
Indeed.
Anytime somebody has a strange story or anything we're talking about, do not hesitate to call.
Well,
I love having you call in.
I guess this is a good time to talk about our upcoming show in December, Juan, quick before we leave.
Oh, yeah.
Promotion on that.
Well, go ahead. Talk about it.
So one of the things we try to do here on Beyond the Edge Radio is bring you something different and unique. And one of the things that we're going to be talking about, I believe it's going to be the first week in December. Just go to beyondtheedgeradio.com for more information. We're going to be doing a listeners calling in with their haunting experiences, and where we'll give advice and our opinions and maybe even get them some contacts they might not have been aware of. So it's almost like a paranormal self-help show. And we're looking forward to it. I know Lon's looking forward to it. Got a lot of stuff going into this, so we need your participation. So if you got experiences, send them an email, beyondtheedgeradio@gmail.com. Go to our website, get in touch with us. We're going to collect, and hopefully you'll participate in our first December show for our haunting of BTE.
Yeah, I look forward to that myself. Kind of like a BTE haunted help. So
there you go.
We'll be promoting it, and it'll be out there. We'll make sure you know about it before it comes on. But Sean said, if you have a question or you have anything you want to talk about, as far as spiritual and hauntings, strange things, things that go bump in the night, just send it to us or contact us.
BeyondTheEdgeRadio@gmail.com. You can go to our website, BeyondTheEdgeRadio.com. You can go to phantomsandmonsters.com to get a hold of Lon off that website. And the Keystone Bigfoot Project. Sean, give out your website.
KeystoneBigfoot.com.
There you go. That's ways to get a hold of us. You can get a hold of me on Facebook at BTE Radio, BeyondTheEdgeRadio.com. through the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society as well. I'm pretty accessible to get a hold of. But
easy.
Pretty easy, yes. But just a quick rundown for next week's show. We've got another great guest coming on the program. You guys have not talked to this gentleman yet, but I can assure you he is a phenomenal...
I have never talked to Chris. I had never talked to him.
Phenomenal gentleman. He has a plethora of years investigating, a number of years investigating the paranormal. He's been featured on such shows as... The Most Terrifying Places in America on the Travel Channel. He's been on Paranormal State, and he investigated the IM6 case. He's been at the Villisca Axe Murder House in, help me out here, Kansas? Iowa. My mistake. Villisca, Iowa. And that's probably one of the scariest places I do not want to visit.
Yeah, so. I'm not even going to go near that place. My head probably explode.
But he's a paranormal investigator who's been investigating dark hauntings for quite some time. He appeared at Scarefest this past weekend in Lexington, Kentucky. And Chris Dedman is our guest next week on the show. So make sure you write that on your calendars and tune in next week because it's going to be a fantastic program, guys.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
Me too.
It'll be a great show.
It's going to be great. And as always, you can catch us live here on the Para-X Radio Network, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 7 to 9 Central. And you can hear our archives on Podomatic, iTunes, Stitcher, Parapods, and right here at Para-X, where we upload a live show to the archives. You can catch that as well. So a lot of great places to find us here on the Internet. And you can always catch us at beyondtheedgeradio.com. Guys, it's time for us to hit the road. What do you say we head for home and have a good night?
Good night,
everybody.
Everybody
have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, folks, this is BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio, live here on the Para-X Radio Network. As I said, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday night. You guys have a great night. We'll catch you again next week.
Join us for another live edition of Beyond the Edge Radio, Sunday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network. Archive shows are available on Podomatic, Parapods, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, the Para-X Radio Network, or our official website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. To contact Eric, Ron, or Sean, email us at beyondtheedgeradio@gmail.com. Beyond the Edge Radio is a Beyond the Edge Entertainment production heard here on the Para-X Radio Network.